I can always come back into your backyard.
Blog
you know.
Radio.
Okay, I think we're on the air live, and I hope we are having communication problems right now.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, I'm on the extension. I'll hang up.
We're ready.
Okay, are we all here?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I'm reconnecting to the server on this end, and I hope, okay, there we go. It looks like we're back in. Welcome to the Sunday Show. I'm Gwen Berry, and with me this evening is Jack Jodell up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Gwen. How are you? And hi, Wayne, everybody, everybody in the chat room and everything else. It's brutally cold up here, but the end is in sight, so...
Yeah, they keep promising that to me too here in Columbus. I'm not buying it.
Well, they say if March comes in like a lion, it goes out like a lamb. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, there we go.
That may be, that might be the trick that makes it turn. I recognize that a lot of people are going through some really cold weather this year. It seems to me it used to be that way, though, in the 70s and early 80s. I can remember screaming because I couldn't make my my flight because the tarmac kept freezing over in Ithaca. And I hear that where David is, and David is our guest today, I understand that where they are in Oklahoma right now, well, Oklahoma is getting hit with ice. Is that true, David?
Yes, it is. We're having a sleet storm right now.
Wow.
Oh,
hi, David.
Pelting us with little ice BBs.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
Real cold, too. Very cold.
Yeah. God. It's a weird year, no doubt about it, any way you look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they've already called off school for the kiddos tomorrow, so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't drive into Tulsa with that kind of roadway, can you?
I'll probably wind up taking a day off or just working from home tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you.
Well, it's nice you have that option. That's great. A lot of people don't.
Yeah, fortunately I do. You know, engineers sometimes can do that. So
yeah, that's true. Good, good.
I wanted to focus today on what's breaking so quickly all around the place is Russia, and it's the topic of discussion. I wanted to read something that I saw posted and urged me to bring our guest in today, which was posted in the Journey with Roundtree 7 Room over on Facebook. A lot of good discussions go on in there. And David, you posted that quote by Kerry, if Russia wants to be a G8 country, it needs to behave like a G8 country. And he's pretty well blowing it, you know, blowing the horn and rattling his saber, as they say, all over the place. But I liked what David had to say. David, you commented, you said that meanwhile, Iraq is still in shambles, Afghanistan is in its fifth decade of war. Pakistan is killer robots hovering over the villages, zeroing in on SIM cards. We bombed the hell out of Libya, suppressed protests in Bahrain, have JSOC operations in Iran and in Somalia and in Yemen, and just barely stopped ourselves from striking Syria, ironically avoided by an alternative plan by Putin. Kerry's statement would be somewhat funny if it wasn't just so damn sad. That's a hell of a statement. It really puts the hands right around the throat of the trouble, which is the aggressive warmongering. And if you take a look at a pipeline map of Ukraine and Crimea, you'll see that all of the major pipelines for crude and gas go right through there, right?
Well,
yes,
that used to be right. Just in the past couple of years, they've opened up a pipeline called Nord Stream that goes straight from Russia under the sea to Germany. and they have Nordstrom, and they also have South Stream, and it was a joint Switzerland, German, and Russian venture that was financed in Switzerland. But they basically have got Ukraine in a very awkward position. They can actually shut off the gas going into Ukraine and still supply Europe now. So,
wow.
You know, Putin really has all the cards. I mean, all he has to do is just sort of step back and just wait it out. I mean, there's no reason besides just securing Crimea and the Black Sea, Black Fleet. There's no really reason for him to escalate it at all.
Well, there are a number
of things that play here, too, that
enter into the picture, one of which is that in recent years, he's effectively gained complete control over Ukraine or over Crimean Peninsula, and he's done that with about 6,000 soldiers. It's not a massive invasion like Hungary or Czechoslovakia were. It's not like that at all, and he's effectively done this by utilizing certain forces in certain ways, and he doesn't even have a massive. He has a big force on the border with the Crimea, but they aren't in the country yet. But the thing is, Crimea is overwhelmingly Russian in population. However, it does hold a significant Tatar minority, and they have started coming back from their. Sent way east by Stalin many years ago, but they've started migrating back to their ancient homeland. The Tatars are starting to go in there, and they're very anti-Russian. So it's really a volatile mix going on, and we don't know what's going to happen. I guess Kerry's going to fly in to Kiev on Wednesday. That's quite a bit north of there, of course, but he, for what reason, God only knows. I know... The upcoming economic talks, I think G8, are supposed to be held in Russia, and there's, some talk of the U.S. maneuvering to get Russia out of the G8, and, it's just a real free-for-all right now.
Yeah, one thing that sort of is a mild irritant to me, when they say in the news that Putin seized Crimea, mm-hmm. Crimea was, they had a naval base, they had... a lot of their own resources and everything there, and mm-hmm. they have for quite a long time. And to mm-hmm. say that they seized it, you could say more that it was protecting his interest. He didn't really seize
yeah,
it. He already had
that
it.
That could be true. Yeah, and, that's typical distortion in the media that you're going to get in this corporate-owned crappy media we have that we're forced to watch here in this country. And thank God we've got the Internet to see the real thing,
Let me
at least it gives an alternate viewpoint. So,
go ahead, Wayne.
I was going to say, Dave. This is Wayne Johnson here in Columbus, and one of the things I want to mention was, Russia. You mentioned the Black Fleet. That is their really only warm water port that they can maneuver their navy out of. Everything else is, like up in the Arctic there, and can be frozen in pretty good. So,
good point.
Brezhnev said. Many years ago when he was in control, he said, if the Soviet Union did not have Ukraine, there would be no Soviet empire.
Right.
In other words, they didn't have the diversification of their naval fleet to be able to flex their muscle should they need to.
And
well,
it seems to me I've heard reports
of
the U.S. Going to be conducting soon some type of naval operations in the Black Sea. Somewhere, so it just gets crazier and crazier. Incidentally,
yeah.
I just learned that the new government in Ukraine that took over that the other guys in Russia now the former president. At any rate, the new government had just yesterday appointed a new naval chief of the navy of Ukraine, and that guy went over to the Russian side just I think today. So there's all kinds of weird stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that there's a lot of Ukrainian troops that have resigned or switched over, and
right.
Who's to know if that's true or not?
Yeah, we don't know. We're going to get some disinformation too. You can bet on that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Well,
and the thing is really when it comes down to it, the U.S. can't really do anything. I mean, all it can do is just act outrageous and
yeah.
Try to do as much saber rattling and all this stuff, but they really are in no position to do anything. I mean,
no, Putin's in the driver's seat, there's no doubt.
Yeah,
well, also,
and,
too, sent a destroyer to anchor into Cuba for, like, the first time in the last, you know, decade or so, and another means of saying, you know, hey, look, you want to play in our backyard? I can go play in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of a many, you know, thumb on your nose, wiggling your fingers kind of a move.
No matter what the disinformation, I mean, you can come out of this of two things, that the overthrow or whatever you want to call it of the Ukraine government happened, and also that the Crimea and the Black Sea Fleet is a vital resource of Russia, and they're going to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't get around that. I mean, we certainly would if we had a big naval shipyard at our border. I mean, look, we basically suppressed the protest in Bahrain because of our huge naval port that we had there.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hear too much about that. But, you know, it's just to be expected that he's going to protect his country's valued resource. And
sure.
So, I mean, what is Kerry and Obama expecting him to do? I just don't understand.
Well, they're on the wrong side of it as usual. I mean, they want to protect U.S. interests and stuff too. But you know, the U.S. is probing its nose in again where it should just stay out, I think.
Yeah.
Well, they did support a lot of NGOs and stuff in Ukraine that sort of dubious, and the people that overthrew the Ukrainian government, which was elected, by the way.
Right.
Through the government, they have a lot of sort of shady characters in there that I think a lot of the West is not emphasizing quite as much as they should.
Right,
you know,
right.
You're talking about some nationalist, fascist, Nazi types, you know, that bad news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Well, it's, again, you know, it's there's no clear-cut things in American foreign policy. There's always contradictions and disinformation at times. A lot of times, and it's always very complicated. It's never a very clean cut, and this is a typical example of that.
I think it's I think it's clean cut right down to the bottom line, which is wherever the money is. I think this money is really at the bottom of all of it, and the people of Russia, Ukraine, or the United States, or Germany, or France, or anywhere. Are really hostage to the whole situation because we have corrupt leadership. I think that's one of the things. I just think that's a big light on the situation right now that we could be also, you know, talking about. There is a political strategy here somewhere.
Oh, yes. The EU was really sort of depressed because of the bailouts for Greece and Spain, and they needed to open up a market. You know, a source for cheap labor. And really for the Ukrainians, it wasn't a very good deal. They only got $1.5 billion of IMF money, and there were so many conditions along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Then Russia came along, and they offered them $15 billion in cheap loans, plus some special deals on gas. Ukraine
and they need
owes,
that desperately. Yeah,
they do. Ukraine owes $1.5 billion to Gazprom right now, and that's a Russian conglomerate, and if they don't watch out, you know, suddenly those tap lines are going to get shut off, or they're going to get some lousy deals because the contract's coming up next month.
And who's surprised by the fact that the IMF made sure that their interests would be served well ahead of the Ukraine's, you know?
Yes, yes.
Typical.
Ukraine's biggest port is natural gas.
Right.
They're very subservient to the Russian natural gas. You cut that off, you made a big impact in the whole economy of that area.
Mm-hmm.
Why would
it come for the people?
Why would
why
would the Ukraine people be, half of them be against working with Russia when Russia has offered them such better deals? I mean, is it because Putin is such a tyrant? I mean, it really, Russia is not a free country. You know, there's a...
No, I mean, the relationship between Ukraine and Russia is a long,
strained
history.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. You know, not to go into the show, because, I mean, you could spend, you know, weeks talking about that, but The thing is there was a lot of the wealthy in Ukraine, plus a lot of the financially supported NGOs that were pushing towards the EU, you know. And to be truthful, the U.S. was sort of encouraging that because, you know, they're trying to basically surround Russia, you know, which for some reason they still consider an enemy. But and, you know, there was a lot of forces going on there. And the thing is just for the most part, the population of Ukraine, they just want to have, you know, a decent life and have a prosperous way to make money and support their families. And so that they're caught in between this big struggle between these, you know, EU-supported nationalists and that type group. And then on the other side, the Russian side, where, you know, Russia doesn't want to have a NATO country right on the border. And, you know, who could blame them?
I mean, we went ape shit when Cuba
became so.
So that's the fractioning of Ukraine, is that pretty much there's a group of people who are pushing hard for the Western deals with the European economy. And
she has a group of people that basically hate Russia. I mean, there is a group in Ukraine that's, you know, like I said, the nationalists, and they can't stand Russia.
And so you combine those portion of the country. The eastern is pretty pro-Russia, and the very south of Crimea is pretty pro-Russian, with the exception of the Tartar minority. But by and large, the west is mainly the most western-looking portion of that country, and the ones that are, you know, that they overthrew the government, they believed it was getting too close to Russia. And it's very complicated, and perhaps it's best that we just stay the hell out.
Well, that's
the thing, is we won't stay the hell out. For some reason, we insist that everything, every place in the world is our business.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, especially where oil is concerned, you know.
Yes, we have to plead guilty and instigating some of this. I mean, we definitely were, you know, financing some of it and training some of it, and we're guilty about it.
Oh, yeah.
But
I was going to say, that reminds me of a T.S. Eliot quote saying, the last temptation is the greatest treason, to do the right thing for the wrong reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Canterbury murder.
Good quote.
I was listening to Kerry this morning, and he was posthumously saying, you know, Russia trumping up charges to go and invade into the Ukraine and stuff. And, you know, the way my philosophical mind works, instantly jumped into, and how is that different than Bush and Cheney reasons of going to Iraq?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would not sin, throw the first stone, you know?
Well,
if you look at it from the Russian point of view, Victor, you know, the one that got kicked out, he's still the legitimate leader of Ukraine. So if he asked for intervention, technically, that's not an invasion.
No, exactly. And, you know, again, it's not the massive invasion the way Czechoslovakia, East Germany, and Hungary were. It's not like that at all. What he's done is he's effectively shut off any way for the Ukraine nationals to really get in there and do much more damage to Russia. And it's just we're playing it up as though it's a massive, huge Russian invasion and it's Czechoslovakia all over again. That's a bunch of crap.
It is a bunch of crap. And it's a saber rattling on our side. And also some of the Republicans are sort of latching onto it and trying to get some political hay from that and saying Obama's
Senator
weak
Ayotte
and all this other
stuff. And Lindsey Graham and John McCain to be shooting their mouths off. That'll happen any day now.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
All the neocons are going to be going ballistic over this stuff.
Especially McCain.
On the AP Wire, they are headlining with, you know, on the AP Wire, that Obama has already pulled out of the G8 talks and that the United Kingdom and France are following suit and that more countries...
I've heard that too.
They're openly in Europe, in Western Europe, of course, condemning all of this. and gathering, they're gathering in there. It's like, you know, they're gathering their wagons.
Yeah, they're not really going to be able to do anything, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, Putin has all the cards. I mean, he can just shut off the gas of Ukraine and still supply Europe. So, you know,
yeah.
That's the thing is the Ukraine people have sort of got screwed by their own sort of radicals and the nationalists. They've
sure.
taken them down a path that they don't really give anything to the EU now because some of the ripest area is around in the Crimea and, you know, that. And so all they got to do is offer cheap labor to EU. They don't have anything else to give them. And the IMF is not going to want to loan them $15 billion or whatever right off the bat without some harsh conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in a rock and a hard spot right now.
And now, of course, the U.S. is threatening to pull some economic sanctions against Russia. So, you know, it's again, it's very, very involved. It's very complicated. And we've kind of got to wait. We've seen some trends, but we got to wait for the dust to clear really to know.
How threatening is that, though? How threatening is sanctions against Russia by the United Nations? How much of a threat could that be to Putin and how he runs his country?
And how successful could such a thing be carried out? I don't know. See, these are big questions we don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Russia supplies a lot of the gas for Europe, so
mm-hmm.
I don't see how they can do anything about that.
Right.
I think it's a lot of it right now is sort of face-saving. You know, the Obama administration and Kerry and all those.
Yeah.
It is a lot of posturing, and it's a lot of saber-rattling, but when it comes down to the bottom line, they really can't do anything.
Right.
I mean, so what if they cancel the G8? You know, they'll have it again, and you know, everybody needs each other as much
yeah.
as the other person does. So it doesn't behoove them to let this thing go beyond what it already has.
Yeah.
Dave,
time for cooler heads.
David, of what you thought might be the outcome of this with, you know, cutting off, I don't know, splitting Ukraine. Do you remember what I'm talking about? You posted.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I could see Crimea, and I mean, it's a lot of Russian tourism in that area. Plus, they have the big naval. I could see that being sort of a part of Russia, and then. Sort of a joint Russia-EU type thing in the other part of Ukraine. I could see that happening as a settlement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, I'm going to have to ask the question, how much of this is really, say, maybe Muslim versus Russian Orthodox like the Serbs and the Bosnians were with that ethnic cleansing?
I'm sure that enters into it.
I don't think that has any much of anything
yeah.
to do with it, really.
Well, I think a little bit it does.
A large Muslim population in Ukraine or not?
No.
But
it is geographically geographically close to the Muslim areas of southern Russia and some of the more Muslim provinces. So that's, I'm sure Putin has his eye on that. But by and of itself, I don't think it's too relevant right now. But I think he's very afraid of another Chechnya, you know, and he doesn't want that happening.
Yeah, of course he wouldn't want that anything like that happening along the border. I think you may be speaking more of Belarus or something like that.
Right. Or, yeah.
What is Belarus? What happened?
White Russia.
Okay, guys, I'm really dropping the ball there. Can you refresh my mind on that?
Well, it's just north of Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
Belarus.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it's just another country that's on the border of
and
Russia.
Typically they've been rather anti-Russian over the years too, so they don't want any other anti-Russian activity going on. Putin, you know, he's playing with fire a little bit here, but some of it he's got to do, really, from a practical standpoint. He has to secure that base in Crimea, and he has to, he's wary of the U.S. presence down there in the Black Sea. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that are driving him, whether they're correct or not. You know, time will tell. But at any rate, that's the real reason that things are happening the way they are.
Well, it all kicked off because of protests that began not even a month ago in Ukraine. And David, I wanted to ask you, do you think that most of that was political strategizing from outside, that this is a maneuver?
You know, there is a faction that does want independence. You know, what was it, the Orange Revolution or something that happened in 2002 that caused the jailing of, what was her name, Yuli, you know, the one that's actually...
The one that was just freed or came back or whatever?
Yeah, she got out of prison just recently. And
rumor has it she's somewhat fascist in nature to a certain extent.
Well, that's the thing is,
yeah, it's crazy.
She is. She's the leader of a fascist group.
Yeah.
And, you know, that it's not... You know, you get this sort of image that's being portrayed in the Western media as these people fighting for democracy you know, just the possibility of being free. There was even a social media thing. I remember seeing it, this sort of young girl, and she was saying that how she – I don't forget what the name of it was, but how they would just wanted to be free in Ukraine. And in the meantime – the nationalist snipers were shooting people in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, it's a rather distorted image that's been
presented.
There's
no good guy versus bad guy thing that you can pull
out. No, there isn't. There isn't really.
There's so much intertwining of stuff that, and so many forces are at play here, you can't oversimplify it like American media loves to do. You can't do that.
And I think for the most part that Putin probably would like to just stay out of it. I mean, considered a victor, the leader that got kicked out, he probably considered him sort of a bumbling fool, you know, that he got into this position. But the guy has to take care of his resources, and he has to be sure that he doesn't have some warring nation right on his border. So, you know, to say that he's seizing or invading or anything like that is really a distortion of what actually
is
happened.
Good point. Good point.
This is not really any kind of a grassroots uprising by the people of Ukraine. This is more of a ginned-up version of let's get it going in the streets and make things happen. I'm trying to understand how the protests became the divider, from what the elements were going into it, they got so many people involved, or was it all just a couple of factions out there and nobody else?
Well, it's murky and you can't really tell, but, you know, it's clearly there's a faction in Ukraine, which is Western-looking, you know, the Western part of the country mainly, that is not that keen on Russian involvement. They're not that keen on Putin. And they want to have more closer ties with the European Union, and
that
part of that is what's that?
That's not the right wing neo Nazi fascist factions, is it?
You're talking about the Pravi Sektor.
Yeah,
that's the prominent group that was protesting. That's. It's a real far-right Ukrainian nationalist group.
Mm-hmm.
They even have like a swastika-like logo.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah. And the thing is, and this is probably sort of a blunder on Viktor Yanukovych's fault, but they have this hero from World War II, Ukrainian, that actually was on the Nazi side. And he sort of, with this group... He's sort of as a hero. He's sort of hailed as a hero. And Yanukovych had a national stamp with his face on it.
Oh, wow.
To sort of appease
these
nationalist groups. Yeah. And it really sort of backfired because it just sort of legitimized the group. And that was one of the reasons why Putin says he's such a bumbling idiot.
Yeah,
but,
right.
I forget what I can look it up right quick. The World War II hero that was a Ukrainian fascist. Look it up right quick. But anyway.
So basically, this is the crowd that is more leaning towards having Russia you know, being on the side of Russia in all of this and wanting Russian
This is a group that can't stand Russia.
No, they can't stand Russia.
Okay,
no, they hate Russia with a passion, yeah.
They're looking to the West is what they're doing too, but they're so far right, you know, they're far to the right of any of the Western nations.
Yeah. Yeah, the hero is called the Hero of Ukraine. His name was Stepan Bandera. He died in 1959, but he's considered a hero by a lot of this nationalist group.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that the West is really getting a picture of just who these people are. I think they're seeing, you know, just a country that's rebelling against Russia. And
well, they would like to simplify that things that way.
Exactly,
and the Koch brothers and all those idiots are you know, pouring fire on that myth, you know.
It's like the old Greek proverb, be careful what you ask for, you just may get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the enemy of my enemy is my friend or something like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think that's the slogan for our foreign policy.
Yeah. It has
I think we would make a deal with the devil himself if it was against Russia.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it seems like we don't really care as long as they're against Russia or, you know, whoever, you know.
Yeah.
So
Russia's to blame in certain areas like Syria. They you know, they've taken the side of the Assad regime, which is not, you know, a good thing. But you know, in this particular case, you can't blame Putin for wanting to not let things slide out of control for him or for his country. And the Crimean port of warm water is very vital to that country, and he's not going to let it slip away or be dominated or taken over by a group that he feels is hostile to them.
Absolutely not. It'd be like giving up Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. You know?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Just to give you an example of it, this Ukrainian group, they actually supported the Nazis back in World War II.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When the Nazis streamed into the Ukraine.
They let them through, yeah.
There was a lot of support locally because they hated Stalin so bad.
Yeah, and they had a hatred of the Jews too. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so once the Germans started treating them like dirt because they were Slavs, that situation changed. But early on, they had a lot of support of Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So
they welcomed them. They welcomed them.
So this is the side that is leaning towards the European connection and the Western resources. And
well, I don't know if they're really leaning towards the EU. They're more leaning towards making Ukraine just an independent nation from Russia.
Well, right. Yeah.
You know, they're nationalists. They want to be in their own right. The EU and the IMF is almost like a separate. this is a many-faceted jewel, this whole thing.
Yeah,
the
point.
EU and the IMF is another sort of side of the whole issue sort of taking advantage of the power of what these nationalists have as far as protesting in the street, taking advantage of that and making that so it delegitimizes Viktor Yanukovych, or whatever his name is, his elected government.
Right.
I can never pronounce. Yanukovych. Viktor
Yanukovych, yeah.
Yeah, I can never pronounce his name right.
So basically,
Yanukovych.
What we've got going on here, like you say, many faceted jewel. This is a huge plate of spaghetti. You can't see where the strings are going here.
No, it's not a black and white thing.
No,
the only thing black and white about it is that you know Russia's going to protect Crimea. That's probably the only sure thing of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Is there anything black and white we can say about how America and the West is going to actually handle this as it plays out?
Well, their hands are kind of tied, really. But I think what's going to happen is they're going to protest and they're going to try and do some kind of move against Putin. But it's going to be a moot point because Putin holds all the cards. There's nothing they can do except complain. The West can only complain. They can't do a damn thing else beside that. And if they try anything, it'll be disastrous. It'll be a complete completely ridiculous move on their part, but that don't mean they won't try it. But I don't.
Think I don't think that even in the worst case condition that they would try something. That would be so stupid.
There'd be a lot of. Yeah. I was going to say there'd be a lot of posturing, a lot of like you said.
That's exactly right.
And we'll chips in and let them run in circles for some anti-submarine warfare type practice.
And what'll happen here, the Koch brothers and their allies and the neocons will use this as another thing to drive a wedge against Obama with. They'll use it as an issue to, he's weak and he's indecisive and he's...
Yeah, you're right.
They'll take advantage of it to make 2014 be a Republican landslide. Right. That's what they're going to try and do.
Yeah, it's become more of a domestic political thing now, in my opinion.
Right.
Obama needs to make it look like the Democratic Party's, strong against Putin and they're in charge for the next election.
Every time people on the left get manipulated that way, it's always a disaster. It really is, But it's happening. It's a classic case of it, it looks like.
Well, let me ask
you.
Well,
I mean, some of the blame is to be laid on their feet. I mean,
supporting
all these NGOs and stuff.
Yeah,
it blows up in their face. They have to,
they got to pay the price for it.
Yeah. Well, the same thing could happen down in Venezuela.
What would happen as far as posturing goes if civil war or worse, Putin put military on the ground into Ukraine? Is that something that you don't see that happening, do you, David?
No.
I don't think
that he really would have a point to.
Even if he did, Ukraine is not well matched. They'd get crushed, boom, just like that. And there'd be a little flack in the foreign press and in the United Nations, but by and large, he would emerge victorious and probably even stronger than he is today. But he just doesn't want to go through all that stuff and risk world opinion against him and all that stuff. But if push comes to shove, that could happen. But
there's nothing really to gain by it.
Ukraine will be nothing after that point. It'll be back in Russia is what'll happen. That'll be and they're trying to avoid that. Putin doesn't want that. Nobody wants that.
No, I mean, Ukraine's deeply in debt. They're a broke country. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing for him really to try to grab. I mean, it's just nothing. He's got what he wants. He's got Crimea.
Right, exactly. That's what he wants.
So now all of what we're watching unfold in the last few days and this is much of it is the fanfare of the press and the posturing of governments that are outside of the situation.
And the far right in Ukraine itself. That's what you're seeing is the uprising and the protests and the getting rid of that democratically elected leader. That's all stuff that, like I said at the beginning of the show, we should just keep our hands out of.
So could the upshot of this actually turn out for Ukraine that a very far-right group seizes power of the political system there? Is that a possibility?
They could, but
Putin
would be a little concerned about that, I'm sure. It's a mess.
It is a mess, but, I don't think Putin really wants to get into Ukraine politics.
I don't think he
really
does.
I mean, all he's concerned about is something is stable, and they don't mess with Crimea.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like Ukraine and Russia have a big love affair going on anyway.
Oh, right.
So now the ball game, as they say, is in the hands of the nationalists, the Ukraine nationalists that are very far right or neo-Nazi and all of that. And who stands, is there anyone that stands against that? Is there any other faction in Ukraine?
There's a thin, very small amount of moderates in Ukraine politics, but they don't hold any power of any sort. I mean, the loudest voices in the biggest players are the extremists. And
pro-Russian. I can see that. What's her name? Yuli Tymoshenko.
Yeah.
Of her becoming a prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
She was one that co-led that Orange Revolution, and she was one that was in prison that just got let out.
Right.
And most of the people looked to her first, you know, from a speech. And also, you know, there are several pictures of her shaking the hands of Hillary, so you got to think that she's got the support of the West. So.
Oh, I would imagine she would, yeah. And that would be a big mistake, too, but we've made them before, and we'll make them again. I'm sure of that. You know, gosh, how do we keep making these mistakes, David, all the time?
Because the Americans,
we're not above supporting extreme dictators, you know, the far right, as long as it's, you know, supposed to be, you know, to our benefit.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, look at Saudi Arabia, you know.
Oh,
I mean, they're not exactly
years,
a democracy. I think they're still chopping off hands, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That, well, and the... Trying to think,
but they supply us oil, you know, without any problem. So,
so the point is to expose the underbelly of all of this with the and make it clear who actually is doing the protesting and the right wing strength in all of this. And expose it, and expose its connective quality or connections to the United States and to our leadership here for what it's worth. Because really, you're talking about it's like Pinochet or letting go of
quite as black and white. I mean, the German and the French also had a part in it. EU had a part in it. You know, some of the IMF were pushing it. I mean, it's a very complicated picture.
Yeah,
you know, it's not so gray and white as like Pinochet.
We can give it one name and call it NATO.
NATO, exactly.
Yeah, well,
NATO.
That's another player that you know Putin is concerned about. You know, and you can't really blame him, I guess, either.
No, who wants a? You know, we wouldn't want a communist country on our border. You know, say Mexico went communist, we'd invade it the next day.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So. It's many factors play into it here. I shouldn't laugh because it is terrible, but, you know, what can you do? We're so helpless in the matter, and we can't, you know, there's nothing we can really do. We got to be practical about it.
The majority of America is not getting the real picture here.
Most of the rich people in Ukraine were the ones that were wanting to go swing towards the EU and the IMF. What's her name? Yulia Tymoshenko. She was very rich in the gas industry. She's one of the richest people in the country. And that's who's wanting to swing towards the EU because they have a lot of money to make and, you know, a lot of connections to make. And it's difficult to do that in Russia when Putin controls all the strings.
Right.
Okay.
But she was one that led the Orange Revolution way back, you know, I guess it was 2002. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not remembering that. Can you relate a little bit about that, David? The Orange Revolution. I'm not remembering.
Well,
that.
Basically, started off as the same thing as what we have now. It actually, I looked it up here. It's went from November 2004 to January, and it had a whole bunch of protests in the streets and mostly at Kiev, civil disobedience and strikes and. She was considered the leader of that, and she got thrown, she was actually the prime minister at one time, and then she got ousted from power, and I think she was thrown in prison at that time. And when she came out of prison just recently, she was, you know, in pretty bad health. She was in a wheelchair and everything, but... It's a complicated, very complicated picture, and, you know, I have to stress that this is probably, even this conversation is really oversimplifying the whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah, I get that real quick.
Well, we're at least a lot more clear on what's happening than the American media, the mass media in the U.S. They're going to try their best, and they're going to fail at every opportunity to try and simplify this and turn it into a good guy versus bad guy thing, an anti-Putin thing. That's exactly what they're trying to do. So it's
right.
You can't believe what you see on the major media in this country.
I've been watching CNN today on and off on my computer here, and they really are, well, they're ginning it up because it's ratings. They are making it into a white hat versus a black hat scenario because it makes it easier for their quote journalists.
Well, don't you know the American public is too stupid to know anything to decide anything if it's complicated? They've got to make it simple. They've got to simplify it all the time. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I think eighth grade level is what they gear it to, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I just keep wondering where people are going to get the correct information. As David says, this is a fluid situation right now that we can't know the outcome, and there are just so many different elements in it that it's a plate of spaghetti. You know, it is
good analogy.
It is. I mean, what you can do is just settle on the things that you know for sure. You know for sure that there's a huge naval port at the Black Sea Fleet for the Russia, and you know that Putin's going to protect that.
Mm-hmm.
And anything past that is
a headache.
Speculation, I suppose.
Yeah,
well,
just that.
The way you
I'm reading this thing, The Prelude to the Orange Revolution, and it's like a soap opera. You got four separate parties. One of them drops out. The other one gets poisoned by dioxin, and then they survive
right.
And returned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And then one of them
that.
Throws the support suddenly for the other one, and then somehow Viktor Yushchenko comes out of the whole thing.
Wow.
Some of the presidential candidate getting poisoned. It was they injected him with the radiation pellet or something that just ends up running through. It's a nice little assassination thing.
Right.
Oh, that was polonium. The guy got hit with polonium in a.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
He was a dissident. He was a dissident, and also he was bringing out some corruption charges against some tied-in mafia sorts in Russia. And he got poisoned in a restaurant, just a tiny, tiny speck of polonium, and there's absolutely no cure for it. You know, it's a horrible way to go.
He died, didn't he? Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. If you get any kind of polonium in your body, you're dead. There's nothing they can do at all.
Where do they get that, David?
Polonium?
Yeah, how do they get that?
Well, this is Russia. You know, they can pretty much get anything they want to.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a
black market.
It's an element. I mean, it's very rare. I don't think it's actually a natural element. I think it's a man-made element, but it's part of the nuclear cycle. You know, strontium and all those.
Yeah, I was going to say it's an enriched process.
Jeez.
But it is absolutely fatal, and it takes just a microgram or so. And even if it's very sort of hideous because you can't diagnose it. It has so many different things. It makes it look like there's a kidney failure. Then suddenly it looks like it's something else, and suddenly something else. And you know, even if you could diagnose it from the very minute you ingested it, you couldn't do anything about it. So
right.
Yeah, horrible way to go.
Atomic mass of 209, atomic number 84. Yeah, it's not a natural occurring.
So all of this has its roots way back down the road with the Orange Revolution and the people that are ultimately the players in this include all of those folks from them coming forward now into all of this. Am I getting that right?
Yes. You have several different players, but this Yuli is a major one. She was the head of that Pravé Sektor, or what do you call it, the Nationalist Fascist Party.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
You have several others that are sort of factions of that. You know, you have struggles within that group of who wants to be the leader. And
she made a public statement a couple of days ago that she would not seek or accept the position of prime minister of Ukraine.
Yeah, but I'm sure she's going to have a lot of say in who is.
Well, maybe prime minister isn't the way they're going, but who knows?
Who knows? Or she might be too ill yet to really accept that, but wants to have a say in the matter, and that's probably what's really happening there.
This is. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say she would definitely be like one of the power brokers behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The puppet
master
will.
Well,
and she's an iconic figurehead too. I mean, she's youthful, blonde, sort of attractive, and she's just sort of a figure that you can sort of latch onto, like an iconic image. So, for them at least.
I saw somebody write something about her smart-assing that she was the Ukraine Sarah Palin or something, but she's a lot brighter than that.
No, she's a lot smarter than that. She's pretty sharp.
I think most amoebas are.
And that's probably insulting the amoebas a little bit.
Oh, come on, tell us how you really feel.
Did you hear her? She was in the news saying, oh, I told you so, I told you so, that Putin was going to invade Ukraine.
She's an idiot.
She's such a fool.
Let's face it.
She is an idiot.
And people, what was it, David? What was the statistic about people not understanding that we revolved around the sun? How many people? What's the percentage of people?
It was like 1 out of 3 or something. It was just some unbelievable amount.
And these people all vote.
Yeah, I made a statement at the time. I said, if the speed of light is 2,000 whatever, miles per second, that's when it takes so long for the sun to go around the earth.
They must be Tea Party members primarily, huh?
Well, exactly.
What's really crazy? You could be sitting and having a drink at the bar rail with an old friend who went to school with you, and they'll say, oh, really? Is that true? And I'm not kidding you there, okay? That can happen.
Here it is, 25%. 25% of the people believe that the sun revolves around the earth.
Jeez.
Wow. I'm not so amazed now anymore. The state these are in, why they're that way.
Hey, listen.
Yeah, their science hasn't advanced since the days of Copernicus.
Oh, my God.
He had an agenda. He had an agenda. That's what it was. The thing is, we're trying to compete in a global market with 25% of whatever it was of our population that is so ignorant of the basic science facts. And we're going to be far left behind as a third world, stuck in the hind boob, we'll call it. What's out there?
That's a good point, though. I mean, if the people can't grasp one of the most basic scientific facts, this is the very foundation of science that, people in the 14th century died to bring that information out,
David, you're really right. I mean, when I was a little girl, I wanted so much to be able to go on my boat. I had to go and take small boat handling courses. I learned then because of the short little thing they'd give you on navigation, just how the planets revolved and such. Even learning it in school, but that stuck in my mind because I was so interested, perhaps. But I mean, when people
I recently read a quote from Magellan saying, there is many, of the ruling class, backed by the religious aspects, that says the world is flat. He says, but I have seen the shadow of the earth on the moon too many times to sign on to that,
Okay.
You just look at the moon, you can see the earth's curved, right?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Anyway, I can't cure stupid.
There used to be this society that believed that the Earth was a hollow ball and there was actually a civilization in the center of it.
Hollow Earth.
Well,
I know
they'll be bringing that up again one of these days.
I know people think that way. It's weird. It's very weird. It's a multi-dimensional thing, gentlemen. You know. listen, David, I want to thank you so much for stepping on board today and talking. And Wayne, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, both of you guys. Great to hear from you both. And David, it's been a long time, so keep it up, buddy.
I'm hoping I could spread some of my confusion about Ukraine. So,
very good.
It's necessary. No, I mean, having the information more clearly represented and understanding just how convoluted it all is and what the possibilities truly could be or may not be. We can't really know because of all that is happening, and there's just no way that America is getting that story at all.
You know, the biggest indicator that the whole thing is convoluted is that it's being portrayed so black and white in the media. Anytime that something is portrayed like that, you automatically should suspect it.
Right.
Something else is going on.
Yep. Absolutely. And then another thing to say, too, would be this. I think the first time I saw it was that Brad Pinko had said about that video you mentioned earlier of the young woman in Ukraine explaining the black and white version of it. If you see a really well done video that smacks of
something
like,
worthy of Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, look how well Dennis Traynor puts them together. Look how well Lee Camp does it. Look how well others are doing it. On our side of the fence, I mean. When you see something that slick, you have to step back, and especially if it seems like it's put out by the protesting parties or it's got a cause or whatever. You really have to step back, take a look, and filter it all through a lens of going out there and getting more information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when it really tugs at the heartstrings like that, you know, it's an easy ploy.
You know, I've said many times, you have to employ critical thinking. You have to look at all the variables. You know, it's like the John Nash's game theorem. You have to first identify all the variables and then play those out if you want to find the real truth of a situation.
Good point.
Well, lots to deal with. Gentlemen, we're at the top of the hour coming up. I want to thank you all for being with me this evening and my co-host.
Thank you, Gwen.
And I'd like to remind everybody that tomorrow night, if any of the crowd is going to be listening, we have Spirit Therapy at 7 p.m. with Nicole Tomasini. Thank you, guys, very much. And David.
Thank you.
And
keep pushing forward.
All of you. I hope that the weather gets a little tamer for you and it's not so dangerous, you know.
Right.
I keep thinking that, you know, all this snow, well, it is water. And water is becoming more and more precious. And I see all the snow, and I think there's got to be something good in it, you know? I don't know. Maybe y'all can slap me.
Yeah, when it melts. Provided it doesn't cause a flood. Yeah, there you go.
That's the optimist of Gwen talking. You're taking the slush and making margaritas.
What gives you lemon? Add alcohol.
Well, we'll see you all again next week. Look forward to it, everybody. Have a great week and keep pushing forward.
Had a great time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Wayne. Talk to you again. David, good to talk to you. Take care. And Gwen, thank you.